Hello, everybody. This is FSHD Society Radio, and you are here with a brand new kind of episode. We're getting into the pulse of what's going on off the hot sheet, Brit Live, late breaking news, however you want to call it. This is the need to know. This is what's happening right now in FSHD Society. We want to keep everybody attuned and abreast of what's going on. And who else is better to fit for that first episode in this version of the show as our one and only Jamshid Arjaman, the Chief Science Officer of the FSHD Society. We welcome him now. How is it going, Jamshid? It's so great to see you again. Thanks for being here.
Well, my pleasure, Tim. Really wonderful to be here. Happy New Year to you and everybody on the listening world. Great to be here.
Absolutely. You know, there's so many big things coming. And of course, with the turn of the year, everybody wants to know what's upcoming, what's happening. A little bit of reflection maybe in the past, but we're here more about the future. So we had a great year in 2021 when it came to the grants. You said there was, like, you know, we talked about that in 2021, record number. Tell us a little bit about what's happening right now in regards to that.
Absolutely. Happy to. You're absolutely right. 2021, despite the pandemic that never seems to be going away, we had a really great year. We had not only a record number of grant submissions, applications submitted for funding to the society, we had some surplus funding. So we were able to fund probably double the amount that we typically fund in any typical year. We funded over $2 million in research grants. And these are the type of grants we call investigator-initiated proposals. They are outside proposals that are coming in to us. And we have a very talented scientific advisory board that reviews and ranks the grants and then recommends them prioritize them and recommends them for, you know, the top ones for funding. And then based on the generous support that we're receiving from the patrons of the FSHD Society, we're able to then fund the top grants. And so I think last year we funded about 15 total grants, maybe more, and adding up to about $2 million in funding. So we are, for 2021, we had another grant cycle that actually ended right before the holidays. So all of these new batch of grants came in. We have 17 applications that we're going to start reviewing shortly with our scientific advisory board. And the trend seems to continue. You know, 17 is a pretty high number for a grant cycle, and they are covering a lot of different scientific domains and different areas. So for instance, there are more applications that are covering the role of the immune system in FSHD, because it's not just DUX4 in the muscle. There could be contributing factors from the immune system. There's a lot of things we don't know about the natural history of the disease, especially in maybe children or even in the adults. There's biomarkers, there's all kinds of things that are, that additional knowledge would be very useful. And so we're getting not only applications from all these domains, but we're also getting applications from people who are new to FSHD. So they're academic researchers or clinicians in other fields that are now interested in FSHD, probably because of all the advances that are happening in the field. And they're like, I can contribute to this. I know something about this topic. It might be relevant to FSHD. So they're applying with us as well. So this is great. The community of researchers is growing, and that's fantastic.
That is fantastic. I mean, it sounds like we've drawn a lot of, a lot of attention in regards to the FSHD Society. Getting that kind of research development is pretty fascinating. We're a little more broad. Would you say that, more of a broad stroke?
Absolutely. We are, you know, we welcome proposals on any topic that's FSHD related. We solicit proposals from people who are in similar fields, maybe in other neuromuscular diseases, but they can have a application to FSHD. And it's really the researchers that are themselves really fantastic that are contributing to this. So they're looking at this opportunity, and they want to contribute to it. So this is really fantastic. The other really important thing is we really are trying to grow the field and encourage younger applicants. So we recommend the applicants to be postdocs and young clinicians who are, or maybe junior faculty members. That's really what we're trying to encourage as well. So people get started their career on FSHD and they kind of get hooked on and they continue to grow the field and bring in new perspectives and new scientific knowledge to the field. And that would be very useful. Wow.
That's very exciting. Yeah, that's great. Exciting news to have that generation, I guess we could say, right, up and coming to learn more about it and want to research about it, get more answers. I love the diversity of the research. I think that is phenomenal because all I've been hearing throughout my time here is DUX4 and this and that. It's great to see it getting more broad.
Yeah.
We had, you know, we always have fundraising events and I've been a part of a lot of them, of course. It's kind of where I like to help and make an impact, and so many others do. When we create that kind of funding, how does that help within the projects? I've heard that there's been kind of some, you know, internal type projects and things that are kind of exciting, even the term biomarkers, which I don't know anything about that, Jamshi. That's why you're here. So how can you explain that, maybe where the funding kind of helps in those kind of projects?
Absolutely. Thank you for bringing this up. So you're absolutely right. So there are these external proposals that come to us. We have two grant cycles a year where we entertain proposals from very smart researchers. Then there is another type of funding that we just started, and these are internally generated proposals. And they're not internal, is that they're ideas that I'm coming up with, but they're developed in collaboration with the pharmaceutical and industry, and they focus on the gaps in clinical trial readiness and obstacles that they perceive that they need to have solved to have a successful clinical trial, be able to take their drug through the clinical trial process and see if the drug works. So this could be anything from, you know, having the right test to run in a clinical trial, or it could be, you know, a biomarker. And what is a biomarker? It's basically a readout to see if your drug is having the effect that it's supposed to have. Okay. So let's say if a drug is supposed to block an enzyme, you kind of want to have a test to show that the drug, once you've injected it or you've taken it as a pill, is actually getting into the tissue of interest. In the case of FSHD, you want to make sure the drug is getting into the muscle. Mm-hmm. You want to see that the drug is actually blocking what it's supposed to do. So you need to develop a test to see that the drug is blocking that enzyme. There's got to be a readout. And of course, in a clinical trial, we want to show that the disease is slowing down. And so you need to have some sort of a functional test. So a lot of these are actually being done. Tests are being developed through the Clinical Trial Research Network through studies like Resolve and Move. But things like biomarkers, what we're trying to do is, instead of doing a needle biopsy, we're trying to see, can we develop some of those tests in the blood? Blood is a lot less invasive than muscle, and it would just make it a lot easier. Now, it's a very challenging thing to do, you know, it may not pan out, but if you don't try it, you'll never know. And the strategy we're developing is really quite simple. We're not inventing anything new. We're not reinventing the wheel. We're going back to all those very important seminal publications that have come out of research projects that we funded, NIH funded, other organizations have funded, and are published. And so we are remining those data, and then we're looking for potential biomarkers that could be activated by DUX4 that might be detectable in the blood. So there's a way of sorting through all these genes that might be turned on due to DUX4, and then trying to determine, are these things that could potentially be detected in blood or not? So some things are sometimes secreted, so they have a higher likelihood of getting into the blood. And so we're sorting them that way, and then we're developing tests to see if that works. And we're working very closely with pharma companies, because ultimately, they're the ones who are going to be testing these or using these biomarker tests in their clinical trials. So we want to make sure that anything that's developed is going to be useful for them. And it also prevents redundancies because if every drug pharma company needs them, they might be tempted to develop their own. And so they're spending resources just trying to develop theirs. And then they might keep it proprietary as their own and nobody else can use it. When we start a project like this and we do it in collaboration with pharmaceutical companies, we'll put it in the public domain so then anybody can use it. And it actually, pharma companies like it because it de-risks it for them. So they can chip into a project as opposed to funding the entire thing on their own. And by chipping in with a couple different groups, if they all chip in a little bit, then we can actually get a lot more done. And this is kind of the strategy. Yeah, it's great for everyone and everybody benefits from it. And everybody then has access to the tools to be able to move their programs forward.
That's fascinating. Wow. Yeah, that I love the idea of having that collaboration, creating a little lower risk. And then, of course, everybody gets the reward. That's kind of nice. Now, you mentioned go ahead.
Oh, I wanted to say, it's kind of like it takes a village, but it also takes a lot of a good scientist. So, for instance, I may come up with a little idea and what's really great is by talking to all the scientists in the pharmaceutical companies, some of them may have already done something like that and they'll tell us about their experience of what worked, what didn't work. So we benefit from experience that they're bringing to the table. So we don't make the same, we don't repeat what they've done. So that's really been very useful. And they also provide a lot of input on what is a better study. And so the study actually has so many eyes looking at it that it's a better study.
You talked a little bit there. You briefly mentioned the CTRN, and I know that there was a little bit of a impact within that world. FSHD Canada came across our news. I know I just kind of wanted to touch on that a little bit, what you've heard about it.
Oh, absolutely. June wrote, I think, a wonderful blog that may have been posted last week. This was really fantastic news. So as you might know, the Clinical Trial Research Network is a network of clinics within the U.S. And now it's actually international. There were three clinics in Europe, but now I think it's growing to about six clinics in Europe. And they are all working together to validate a lot of these outcome measures that are used in clinical trials. So not only are they doing this, but it's also because it's a network and all of the centers are very familiar with FSHD and how to run tests. They have standardized ways of doing it. That's the first go-to place for pharmaceuticals to go to when they want to plan a clinical trial. So they will use the network. They will use additional sites as well, but the network is just a great way of a starting point for them to design and launch a new clinical trial. So the clinical trial, my understanding reading June's blog that she wrote was, since I wasn't here when it all started, but the society was instrumental in providing some of the seed funding that got the network started. And then once it got started, the network was able to get funding through the Muscular Dystrophy Association and through NIH for the Resolve funding. And it's been growing. And then other pharmaceutical companies have been putting money in also to expand the network, which is fantastic. And around the time that IR came, maybe 3 years ago, we were looking to expand the US sites and we added four more sites. So the society funded the expansion of the network with four more sites. And I think this was maybe in 2020 that this kind of started happening. Mm-hmm. And now that the Resolve study is ending, there were concerns like, well, what's next? How is the network going to be supported going forward? And how can it possibly be expanded? And this is thankfully, other groups are also realizing how important the CTRN is. So FSHD Canada has stepped in, and I believe the blog, or at least their press release, announced $2.8 million over the next 3 years to not only fund and support the existing network, but also to now expand it with sites in Canada.
Wow.
And this is really fantastic. They're also adding a component to the next iteration of Resolve study, which is now Move Plus has an imaging component to it, an MRI component to it, and they're going to be supporting part of that. And this is really fantastic because the network is going to expand and also allows the society now to look at other things. So we can now do things that are a little bit different. Our funding can go maybe into expanding, looking for sites in Australia or maybe somewhere else. We might be able to look at something different than the CTRN. Those would be the additional sites. Because not every, so the CTRN is doing research. So they're all very involved. They're doing these Resolve and Move studies, but it's always good to have additional clinics that are have the capability, but not necessarily actively engaged. So when a clinical trial starts, pharma companies can just know that, okay, there's 10 additional sites they can go to if they need to recruit more people and run tests. These sites have been vetted. And this is kind of what we're looking forward to doing in 2022 is coming up with a process of identifying additional sites that could be part of a clinical trial, not necessarily the research, but the clinical trial to support industry.
Wow, man, that is exciting news. You're bringing a lot of that today, by the way, Jamshed.
No, I'm really excited. And this is something that because of the way the field has progressed, we're anticipating new clinical trials, several new trials to begin either by the end of 2022 or early 2023. And so this network, we don't want it to be maxed out. So it's really important that there is reserve in place so we can actually expand it. And any company that wants to start a trial has access to sites and patients and well-trained clinicians that can help them out. And that's where we think we can have an impact in trying to set up that expanded loose network. You know, it's not part of the CTRN. It's just going to be, we'd like to call it the, you know, centers of care, you know, identifying where there's already neurologists that are seeing patients and trying to assess what capabilities do they have. Do they have an MRI scanner? Do they have access to some of the routine testing that the research centers use? And if they do, then they could be a potential trial site.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, I know there's other big events coming throughout the year too. Like I know in June there's, you know, big event coming. Last question for you is kind of what are some of those events that you're most excited about?
Well, definitely June is, we've already started planning for June. So it's going to be in Orlando. We're having the International Research Congress on a Thursday, Friday. I think Saturday, Sunday, there's going to be FSHD Connect. And then I think on Monday, there's a World FSHD Alliance meeting. So it's kind of a trifecta of a meeting. So I'm only really focusing on the International Research Congress. But my colleagues at the society are involved in all of them. And my colleague, Mikkel Lang, actually, a big shout out to her because she's the one who's actually organizing physical, like the hotel arrangements and all of that for all of these meetings. So she's going to be busy from now until through June.
yeah, that's a big undertaking. You're right. Talk about a trifecta. That's a one, two, three.
It is a trifecta. Oh. And I'm very excited. So the way the IRC has been growing every year is also pretty impressive. Every year, because of the pandemic, we've actually, the last 2 years have been virtual meetings and the number of attendees has really skyrocketed. We used to get about 120 or so. Then the first year of the IR, we were virtual, it was about 180 attendees. I think last year was, I'd like to say around 300 people attended virtually. So that was absolutely amazing. So now we're going to do a hybrid going forward. We realize that there's always people that cannot travel for whatever reason. You know, maybe it's too far to come for just a 2-day research meeting, but by offering the meeting virtually, we know that there are a number of people are going to attend virtually. And obviously, I'd love to get back together. I'm hoping this pandemic ends so we can actually network properly and talk to people over coffee and really understand their little bit more about their research. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Absolutely. That's so many great things you brought to the table today. So many great stories. How do people find out more if they want to look into it on their own, Jamshid? Where's the best way to go?
I am told that our website is really the place to go to do that. And I know that we have a lot of, on every page, there's an opportunity to sign up and get our newsletters. I actually get a lot of the newsletters because as a staff, I just get automatically get all of these, but I learn a lot about what my colleagues are doing through these newsletters. And it's really invaluable to me when I find out like, oh, wait, we're having a meeting about this. Like, I'd like to attend. I'd like to learn more. So, and then we also have the Advocate that gets published, I think, 3 times a year. And I think there's always an online version of it. I always learn a lot through that as well. You know, just recently, I mentioned June wrote this wonderful blog post about the expansion of the CTRN, the support from FSHD Canada. I am not on social media myself, but I think that there is a lot of news that goes out to the various channels, social media channels. So that probably always links back somehow to either a blog story or something to our website or the calendar of events on our website. So I think there's a lot of information on the website. I should probably look at it a little bit more often.
Thank you very much, Jamshid, for giving us all the late breaking news to FSHD Society. That's right. Find out more. Go to FSHDSociety.org. And as Jamshid said, there's a lot of things on the website there, as well as follow us on social media. Thanks again, Jamshid, for joining us.
Thank you so much, Tim.
Good news. Yep, thank you.
My pleasure.